Red State Talk Radio.
The Talk Monster.
God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Businessman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to The Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And I'm joined by Leonor Kubota.
Good morning, Scott.
I hope she had a nice weekend. Did you have a nice weekend?
Yeah, I did.
Did you? Yeah. What did you do?
What did I do? I went to the gym. I took some walks. Did some reading. Tried to enjoy the summer. And you, what did you do?
You know, despite Arlington, Virginia, we're in the Beltway here in D.C., and despite Northam, being the black-faced KKK guy that he is, and also attacking our Second Amendment, also attacking the electoral rights of our voters, Arlington is kind of stayed open. We don't have this phase two, phase one, phase three, whatever it is that we're doing. But, it's interesting over the weekend, everybody's sort of upset with Fauci. And I've had these debates about Fauci. And I'm like, well, Fauci isn't speaking because Fauci is a big party pooper. He just poops all over the party. He's one of these naysayers. And he can't help himself. And it's because he's got investments. He's an insider trader. He trades on the inside information that he gets, and he becomes rich, not from the salary he's taken since the 80s, but by the inside track information and hobnobbing around with people like Bill Gates, giving him inside tips and promises that he's going to invest in certain key areas for vaccines and what have you, to the point where you could rest assured that, you'd have to be a moron to not figure out who the next best drug is going to be. So, that's Fauci. But there's been a lot of talk about Fauci over the weekend. But in Arlington, we actually could walk into a restaurant and, but we were talking about this over the weekend,
yes,
weren't we? And we said, but why is it still so dead? Why are people not going out into the restaurants? And why? We came up with a couple of conclusions on that.
Yeah, I kind of thought one of the reasons is because I think people are still scared about COVID. And then the other reason I thought about is I think people have adjusted to not going out as much. I can say for myself, on one hand dying to get out and go socialize, over the course of the months that have happened, you've gotten used to being at home. And I'm not saying being at home is the better way, but I think you're thinking about your time out and more selective experience. And
yeah,
you also don't want to be sitting in a restaurant where there's almost nobody in it, because part of the point of going out is to be among people.
That's the problem for me. See, the problem for me is I don't want to go out. When I go out, I tend to, really be anti-mask. But Trump, he wore his mask to Walter Reed, and the media went crazy over it. Like, oh my God, Trump's wearing a mask. He wore a nice blue mask. So over the weekend, Trump wore a mask.
Yeah.
While canceling that Portsmouth, New Hampshire rally because of her, I guess, Tropical Storm Faye was up there. So there was a tropical storm that came into play, and he just decided he wasn't going to take a risk. That and Governor Sununu wasn't going to greet him. So Governor Sununu, Chris Sununu, the son of
John Sununu,
is a Republican governor, but yet still doesn't have the full-throated support, I guess, of Donald Trump. You know, you wonder where these rhinos are coming from. Donald Trump has spoken up against John Thune and Mitt Romney because of how they came out with a tongue lashing over the Roger Stone commutation. We'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, and we still can go out. But, you know, one of the things is, you know, the government and all their rules and their violation of our civil rights has sort of taken the fun out of going out, too. It's like, OK, I'm going to go out. Oh, wait. Yeah, I need to bring my mask. Right. And I told people last week, I tend to play around with masks sometimes. I have a good mask, but I mean,
well, you have a bunch of good masks, as do I.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So I've on time to time, I've gotten like a tissue and, you know, some tape and, you know, some rubber bands and put that on my face.
Sometimes you've just used the tissue.
Like, yeah, I didn't have one, but, you know, this should be good enough, right? And there's people will be looking at, that's not really a mask. And I'm like, neither is yours. It says it right on the box that you bought your mask from. Does not work. Does not prevent disease. Just like Fauci told us back in March or February, where they said, you don't need a mask and masks don't work. And all of a sudden, you know, now everybody has to wear a mask everywhere. I'm hearing like every state is requiring a mask in one way, shape or form.
The concept of what's a common area seems to be growing.
Well, and it's confusing because like in maybe my lobby of my building, I might have to wear a mask and I'll get some serious looks if I'm not wearing a mask. But then once I'm out the door, I'm free and clear. But then once I walk into some other place. So, you know, the whole idea is even now when you can go out and you can go into a place, you don't know. The streets are still empty. If you do this live feed like on a lot of different cities, they're still kind of empty. And you walk out, it's still kind of empty. And if you were to go and say, hey, I want to go and hang out and have a beer and some nachos. Okay, you're going to sit there and what? Eat them by your, you know, with no one around you? Part of the fun of going out is to talk to other people, meet people. And then the other part is the social distancing. And then, you know, I don't mind the distancing, but maybe if you talk too much, there might be some spray coming out of your mouth.
People are concerned. They don't want to get close to people anymore. And that's scary,
too. I've decided to just say, you know, the heck with it. I'll wait until you guys figure it out, and then I'll get back to my life. But, man, we're living in some strange times. And I guarantee you after the election, this is all going to be gone. All this crap, all this BS is going to be gone because I think it's all political. It's Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. And we see that everywhere we turn. If we take a look at this Roger Stone commutation, what did they want? So Roger Stone really didn't do anything wrong. You know, I heard somebody saying, oh, you know who it was? Waters World.
And we're going to Jesse Waters, yeah.
Yeah, at the bottom of the hour here, we're going to play a really nice clip for you that's going to get into that. But basically, it's sort of like if a cop throws a gun, right? I mean, if a cop plants a gun on you and somehow you take the gun that's been planted on you and you throw it in the river, did you really commit the crime? I mean, you didn't because it was a dirty cop that planted the gun on you and then you're throwing it in the river. When Roger Stone says he did nothing wrong, he didn't do anything wrong except for, you know, threaten the guy's cat. You know, saying if you do that, I'll kill your cat or something like that. Or it was some weird thing.
It was some tongue-in-cheek response.
Over social media, you know, a guy with zero criminal record, right? But the commutation came And basically, Trump just threw his nose, you know, threw salt in the eye of Amy Berman Jackson, the biggest corrupt judge in D.C., other than Emmett Sullivan. I don't know which one is the dirtier judge. But we got two really dirty judges. Somehow, out of all the judges that were available, we got the two dirtiest judges on the planet in the history of America. Working the Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, and Mike Flynn cases. What are the odds?
Yeah.
That these Obama judges would be corrupt in the first place? And secondly, what are the odds that you would get both of them? Well, again, this is not a coincidence. You know, just like what we're hearing about, too. There's another story where you have these, you have the a group on social media that's looking into the Wayfair and looking into Amazon and looking at all this different furniture and different products and pillows and whatever. And you'll see them all like, you know, $300 and something. And next thing you know, there's a name of a person who's a kid that was missing. And that particular product is $12,999. And the idea here is that you're, people are trafficking children by way of selling their products at abnormal prices. Maybe the price for a child is $12,999, but they're posing it as a desk that's supposed to cost $299.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And the name of the desk is the same name of the person who actually went missing. And so that's been going around. And again, that particular area subject, you would think, okay, there's not a lot of room for coincidence here either. There's too many coincidences. Hey, we're going to take it to a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And we're back. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to the Scott Adams Show, and I'm joined by Leonore Carvota. We really are living in a world of Trump derangement syndrome. There's another hate crime hoax, and his student claims that he found racist notes on his car. Police say he wrote them. He wrote them himself. So why is it that the Democrats keep wanting to play themselves off as the victim? And the other one is this, you know, I'm getting so sick and tired of these athletes, one after the other, getting involved in this social justice. So this next one was Lewis Hamilton. He's a British, he's a Grand Prix race car driver, right? Happens to be, I guess he's black. He's got a mask on, so you can barely tell, but I think he's black. He's got the corn crows in his hair and whatever. He's in Europe. And so he's holding up like this black power fist symbol. And you say, okay, well, you know, I don't know where the struggle came from over in Europe. And, you know, I guess it was perhaps around the world, you know, where there's been black slavery of black people in every country almost. And you wonder why that is. You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly why that is. I remember we've had several people like Crystal Wright or Amy Wax or Heather McDonald to come on and talk about the idea. The question would be, okay, we've had our Jim Crow. We understand black slavery in America and we understand our own history. But where's all this other, you know, what has happened in other countries? And I remember having this one guy on, and he was a black civil rights leader. And I asked him the question. I said, can you name one country where blacks haven't been repressed or, you know, treated as poorly? Or can you name one country where they've led a successful economy, where they've been the rulers? And he couldn't name one in the history, in the whole history. And I thought, well, that's odd. You know, what else is going on here? What else is in play that could be causing these things to happen? I have no idea. But I think it's a worthy question to ask. Yeah, we have to look at the broader picture to figure out this problem because it really has become a problem. Racism gets launched at at all kinds of people. If you're not socialist, if you're not Marxist, if you're not a communist, you will get called a racist. And that's the problem that's so horrible right now in America, is that someone like Donald Trump, who's gotten awards from Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who've all patted him on the back and said, you're a great man, 15, 20 years ago, all of a sudden, you know, he's a white supremacist and a racist. And yet, when you look at Trump's policies, they're the best policies of any president, black or white. And in a country where we actually did elect a black president twice, as recently as 3 years ago.
Yep.
You know, so, or 4 years ago. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, it just doesn't fly. The data sets aren't there. Just like when Black Lives Matter says, what's your beef? It's like, black police brutality. It's like, police brutality? Okay. How many people in 2019 actually got killed who were defenseless and unarmed black people? 10. 9? 9 or 10? Okay. And how many, you know, black-on-black murders were there? Oh, a lot more, like thousands. So, I mean, you can't... So I go and I say to Lewis Hamilton, I say, Lewis Hamilton raises the black power symbol like the white power brothers before him with his promotion of Marxism, Marxist socialism, as he celebrates his privilege of being a wealthy race car driver. Gratitude. I mean, where is the gratitude? Where is the symbolism? Where is the message that says, if I can make it, you can make it. If I can make it, anybody can make it. That's not the teachings of Black Lives Matter or from a Marxist, which is what this is all run by. Thousand Currents, Act Blue, are all political arms of the Democrat Party that finance candidates up and down and across the board, to the point where In the wake of this, we have two big problems. In the wake of the rioting, we have the highest numbers we've seen in years with regard to crime, looting, armed robberies, and gun violence. Okay, naturally, we would expect that. We've seen it in history, like in the wake of Freddie Gray, Baltimore just went down the tubes. And so we have precedents for this. But when we take a look at it, we also can say that fundraising has gone up for the Democrats. So as crime goes up and chaos and fear and anarchy goes up, so does the Democrat fundraising. I don't know how that correlation could possibly exist, but it does. And so far, the Democrats in the last month or two, they've actually outfunded the Trump team. And you say, if you're losing to that, you know, somebody's got to talk to Rona McDaniel.
She needs to get her act together with regard to the convention as well.
Yeah. And so this other lady says this about Fauci. She says, I prefer a president who doesn't undercut Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, Barbara Mellon. I said, I prefer a president over a doctor. That has a proven track record of using the wrong over a doctor who has a proven track record of using the wrong models, and it was contradicted himself regarding wearing mask wearing and projections, working from the same office using inside info to make profitable trades is all that Fauci has become, and we're supposed to be honoring these people. You know, I was looking at something that Trump posted over the weekend with regard to media ratings. And yeah, it is true that Fox News, in their best cases, outperforms both CNN and MSNBC combined. Tucker does it. Hannity almost does it. But that might sound like a sweet spot, and that might suggest that maybe, the Republicans got this, right? And the Democrats are losing their butts, right? They can't compete. They're not even close. But when you do add up the aggregate, when you add up CNN and MSNBC, and then you throw in a couple of others like CBS and ABC and NBC, their main channel, and some of the other news outlets like Young Turks or whatever, you're still going to get basically a bigger number of left-wing subscribers than you are with just Fox News. And even Fox News is starting to sell out, where Fox News is about 70% conservative. And, you know, they, the other teams, you know, the CNN and MSNBC, they're 100% liberally biased, lying and showing this, you know, exuding disinformation. So we got our work cut out for us, because when we look at these numbers, you know, there is enough people watching and consuming anti-Trump rhetoric on a daily basis that actually outmatches Fox. Again, Fox is number one, but when you compare them to the aggregate, they're not number one. So we got to be very careful. And that's why I think that the thing that happened over on Friday with Goya was so important. Because we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about corporate America and multinational corporations, and why, and asking the question why it is that they keep subscribing to this liberal mantra, this Marxism, this socialism, this anti-American behavior. We know why Disney's doing it, because they want a big piece of China. But for the most part, a lot of these corporations, and even over the weekend, we saw LeBron James sell out because of the ESPN reporter.
Yeah.
The ESPN reporter that said F you to Senator Hawley, right? Because Senator Hawley's trying to get to the bottom of, you know, this Chinese influence, right?
Right.
He's been leading on this. And ESPN decided to say F you to Hawley, which, disrespectful to a senator, yes, but, you know, okay. But he did it. Wonder why he did it. Because ESPN is kowtowing down to China. You know, basically, they can't say anything negative about China.
Because
they
want China represents a lot of their revenue.
They want
that's
that China
why
market.
They want that China market.
Disney wants to sell Disney World in China.
And Goya wants to sell foods.
And Disney owns a lot of different channels. You
right,
know that,
they,
right?
It, well, movies. Well, Disney has a lot of business. It's a multi-faceted corporation. But, you know, after the CEO of Goya praised Donald Trump, a boycott started. CEO Robert, how do you say his last name, Yananu, praised Donald Trump at a White House event, and then and suddenly a bunch of people have started saying, well, let's boycott Goya. But then some of the conservatives have come back out in a backlash against the boycott and started saying things like, go out and buy Goya foods. Like Mark Levin said, go out and buy your Goya foods. Marco Rubio, you know, had a post where he said, I love Goya. So there's a backlash against the backlash.
Right. And I think that the I love Goya is actually resonating bigger than the boycott Goya.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, one's a positive message, one's a negative message, you know.
Positivity always works better.
Yeah. One is basically saying, you know what? I'm not going to sit here and bash Donald Trump because he's helped my bottom line. He has made a better playing field for all businesses to thrive.
And this is basically the president of it. Yuanu is, you know, he's Hispanic. So he's praised how President Trump has helped Hispanic prosperity.
Which, yeah, I mean, which brings to me to the next big issue. So I'm a big fan of Goya. I've never been before.
Mm-hmm.
I would always go with maybe Campbell's or, you know, maybe the store brand, but never real specific. Next time I go to the store, I'm buying all Goya for whatever can needs I need. But let me tell you something. All over the internet, they're showing these videos of people buying off the shelves, hoarding Goya. And this one guy, I retweeted this video where he says, he's buying all Goya cans, right? Puts them in his cart. He says, I'm going to the food shelter.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, what a great donation. You know, you could get, in some cases, 33-cent can, three for a dollar, right? You know? Three for a dollar soups.
Yeah.
So take them down to the soup kitchen. You know? Buy Goya. And show this market that the conservative movement is alive and well, and who they're playing with. And this is an opportunity. This could be a dry run, a test run, to show people what it is that you're made of. And you're not going to get whacked over a head or, you know, it's not like wearing a red hat where if you walk down the streets of D.C., you'll literally get attacked.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, just forget about it. It's going to happen. I just saw this Wojciech Pawlowski, flash up on my screen. Yeah, he's the producer for Jack Posobiec. He's Polish. And Duda won another 5 years, which was a referendum on conservatism,
absolutely,
by the way.
Yeah.
That was another big deal where Poland just won a big-time election, and the conservatives won big time in Poland.
Well, okay. Do you remember when we were in, I think it was when we were in Budapest, or we were in between places in Budapest, that we had a conversation with somebody from Poland, and he was talking about the conservative movement in Poland.
Yeah, well, it's powerful. And I've never been to Poland. I want to go to Poland just because I feel like I'd be surrounded by a bunch of conservatives who love Americans, right?
Yeah.
And love Donald Trump. But getting back to Goya real quick, that's a big deal, by the way.
It is.
Because if he lost, that would have been probably the beginning of an upsurge among globalists. From what I understand, Duda won big. I don't know. Well, I'm going to go into this next thing about Goya and DACA and Dreamers and things. Is it possible you could look and see if it was a landslide, Leonora?
Okay, I will check.
Yeah. So here's the thing. While Leonora is getting us those great numbers, and I do see a caller just called in. We'll go ahead and take that in just a moment. But I want to get into this whole Goya thing real quick. And that is, I saw some conservative radio show hosts, like that loser Steve Dace, who hates Trump. go ahead.
Leonard. Yeah, it actually was not a landslide. It was he narrowly won. He got Duda got 51.2% of the votes.
Wow. See, I'm surprised because he had these squares full, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of enthusiasm we were seeing here in the States. So he won by about 2 or 3 points.
Well, like I said, it's 51.2% of the votes. So I'm trying to find the exact number
that's
of votes,
that's
what his percentage was. So it was very narrow.
All right, I was hoping for a bigger landslide.
Well,
than
hey,
that.
It's still positive.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so okay, so we have getting back to Goya, Spanish, right? And then you have AMLO. Now we played the clip for you. About AMLO last week. And the AMLO quote was very special because it was Lopez Obrador. President Lopez Obrador said this. He said, "President Trump treats us with respect, treats us like a country, treats us like we're equal." He said, unlike other presidents, or he didn't say it quite like this, but he said, and he does not treat us like a colony. Alluding to the idea that other presidents would treat Mexico like a puppet nation or like a colony. And he said, Trump has never done that. And that's the thing I respect the most about Donald Trump, is that he treats us with respect and he treats us like a country, not like a colony. And I thought that was extremely important. Now Trump has come out and said, well, he doesn't expect anything from the House. So what he's going to do now is he's going to address DACA and a path to citizenship. If you recall, back when he offered up 1800, the Republicans blew a gasket. And pundits that hate Trump, like Steve Dace, blew a gasket. They were never Trumpers, even though they call themselves Republicans. And the problem with that is that what they would be, they didn't understand the math. That if Trump at the time was going to offer up 1.8 million amnesty for DACA, that was the biggest number, bigger than what even Obama offered. Well, in exchange for that, he was going to get the funding for the wall, easy peasy, which would have stopped 20 million people from coming over the wall over the next 10 years. So the point is that you do the math. Swap 1.8 for 20 million, not just to mention that, but it would have cleaned up the drug trafficking, human trafficking, and a whole host of other crimes. And in addition, there was going to be vetted testing, meaning that of the 1.8 that would have been subjected to amnesty, a lot of those would have been rejected. So before we go any further, because the caller is waiting, we're going to go ahead and take the caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Anita from Monterey.
Hey, Anita.
And I just wanted to make a point about Goya. they make something, and I'm going to, hopefully people will go out and get it, but it's a pastry shell. And sometimes it's in the refrigerator department, sometimes it's in the freezer department. And it's a little bit different than the Pepperidge Farms, but it's excellent. You can put, like, canned apples, like, you know, for a pie or something in there, and it's great. It's fast. But scrambled eggs, cheese, and bacon, you fold it over, put it in the oven for about 10 minutes, great. And a girlfriend and I went out. We both bought $50 worth of Goya and donated it. And it was kind of funny because over in Salinas, the guy had us walk back with him with the bags. He opened up the door. And it was all full of Goya. So everybody's been doing it, and I think that's great.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say. So bye, Goya. Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
Bye, Goya. Thank you.
Bye, Goya.
All right. I love that. I love that caller. So that's such a great call. I love that. That's exactly what we need to be doing, folks. Is
positivity. We need to reinforce good behavior.
Yes, of course. And so this guy was standing on his own principles, and... You know, like I just read a report over on the Gateway Pundit where this woman got killed by Black Lives Matter because she said all lives matter. Since when do you get killed for actually stating the accurate sentence, right? No, I'm not
that's
a Marxist.
That's scary. That is incredibly scary,
right?
That things like this are happening.
You know, but you know what I love about what's happening, though, in the positive part of this? Is people have exposed Black Lives Matter for being the fraud that they are. They're white run. They're run by white people.
But you know what's going on?
For the most part.
You know what's going on? I just read something. A lot of elite private schools are being told to include Black Lives Matter in their curriculum. You know, schools like Dalton, Exeter, some, you know, Andover, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And you know what's happening, though? There's been a further backlash because the schools have said they've complied on a certain level, but some of them are saying, okay, wait a moment. You know, because they're demanding even more and more.
Yeah, well, check this out. So, and before we, you know, we're going to get back to Goya and AMLO and DACA and a couple of other things here in a second. There's a story here on Gateway Pundit that says 83% of Los Angeles teachers vote to stay closed in the fall, will not open schools unless charter schools are closed and police are defunded.
Well, let me make
Can
a point.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can't believe that. Let me make a point of clarification for people because people don't often realize
this. We're going to get the charter schools and stuff in the next segment.
Let me just make this quick point. Charter schools are also
public schools.
They tend to receive less funding than traditional public schools, and also they do more with less, and they are not based on unionized teachers.
Yeah, and Thomas Sowell gave a great,
fantastic
interview.
I encourage everybody to watch
Levin
it.
With Levin last night.
Yeah.
Blew me away. The guy's 90 years old.
I couldn't believe he was 90 years old.
Me he was 70.
And it was an hour-long interview.
Yeah,
I mean, that was one heck of an interview.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thomas Sowell. I'm one of the biggest Thomas Sowell fans. How long have I been talking about Thomas Sowell?
You've been talking about
it
as long as I've known you. And I got to say, I was blown away by that interview.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're going to get the charter schools next. So in case I forget. But here's the thing. So this Goya, so there's a lot of Republicans that are upset with Trump because he's brought up this DACA, and he didn't have to because he's just doing an executive order. Why in the world would you do that? And I said to Steve Dace, I said, the reason why, I said, he's not going for, you know, Dace is constantly giving poor analysis. And the idea is that he's not going for, you know, a couple of pinto beans. He's going for the whole enchilada. You've heard that expression.
Since we're talking about Goya, what a great segue, Scott Adams.
Yeah, I bet you Goya makes great enchiladas, you know. I mean, Spanish company and all. But I happen to be like the world's... there's two things that I'm aficionado on. I always can tell whether it's a good Spanish restaurant by their enchiladas and a good Chinese restaurant by their egg rolls.
And by that, you mean whether they actually have egg rolls on the menu, because we have discovered through our travels that egg rolls are being eroded. They're being replaced by spring rolls, and they're not the same thing.
Spring roll is not an egg roll.
Absolutely not.
Who tries to tell you otherwise? But, you know, this sounds a little racist, actually. You know, talking about Chinese food and Mexican food.
No, it isn't. It's ethnic pride, I think. I mean, it's diversity that we have.
Remember One American News Network, Chanel Rials?
Yeah.
Right. And she said, is it racist to say Chinese flu? Is it racist to say Chinese food? Right.
No.
You know, so that's what she's talking
exactly.
about. Anyway, the point is with this DACA, so you got the Goya, right? You got Goya. And you got Goya speaking up about truth and not worried about social justice. You got the exposure of Black Lives Matter being a Marxist group, and that their name, which was designed to trick us all to where we couldn't lay a glove on them, because how dare you hit Black Lives Matter? Yeah. How dare you hit them? You know, but now we've exposed them for the fraud that they are, right? Thankfully, Antifa has exposed themselves as just a ridiculous terrorist group, but now we can get them through international investigations, interstate investigations. That's another one. But with this DACA Dreamer thing, I think Trump is trying to go and win over the Hispanics. He's got them. He's got a whole bunch of things going on. He's got the Goya in his pocket. He's got the AMLO remarks. I think that what he's doing is he's winning over a lot of leadership in the Hispanic communities. The Hispanic communities are naturally conservative in the way that they are as a people. And so what I think could be happening is that the Democrats were importing voters thinking that they could buy the Hispanics. And what Trump is doing is where they were trying to win them over with socialist dollars, the Democrats, mm-hmm. by saying, we're going to take money out of the middle-class taxpayer working American, and we're going to give it to you. We're going to give you the farm. We're going to give you this, give you that. And Trump said, no, I have a better path for prosperity, the American dream. And Trump is selling the American dream to the Hispanic, and he's going to now offer them a olive branch with Dreamers and DACA, because I think that it's a non-winnable situation. You can't put that genie back in the bottle is the problem. And Obama started it. But Obama let that genie out of the bottle, and you couldn't put it back. And Obama knew what he was doing. I blame Obama for this Dreamer mess. And it is a mess. But somehow Trump has got to figure it out. And you could actually go to the finish line kicking and screaming and look like a loser. Or you could actually say, what are my chances of actually winning this group over?
Right.
And actually using all the importation that the Democrats actually did over the last two decades and actually turn them around and actually make it backfire on the Democrats by actually getting a majority of that population to support you. And I think that's where Trump is going with this. We're going to go ahead and take this caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Scott. Good to talk to you as always. A voice of sanity amongst the nonsense. Yeah, I said when I called in a solution, and let me tell you, this stuff, this Black Lives Matter that was started by Obama, another one of his many genies, not to be confused with I Dream of Genie. She actually had good motives. joke. In Paoli, my daughter's mother-in-law was at a Starbucks, and out of nowhere, a heavy-set black woman sat on the car. She went into shock, and this heavy-set black woman was directing other blacks around her. And the irony is, my wife, who's really a flaming conservative, and she's from Puerto Rico, she's Hispanic. She said, it's going to be in your neighborhood, and they all thought it was funny and didn't think, oh, this, that, and the other, and then because they're here from Argentina, and now they got a dose of reality, and they're in shock.
Wait, why did the woman sit on...
My wife and I aren't in shock.
Why did the woman sit on the car?
I'm sorry?
Why did the woman sit on the car in the first place?
Well, she sat on the car so that my daughter's mother-in-law would just sit there and be in shock while directing other black people around her. In other words, stopping the white so that the blacks could jump ahead and get service over her.
Wow, that's unfortunate. Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Suppose it had been my car. Well, then my solution is simple. It's called brake check. you hit accelerate and then stop. Because that's, you know, the pursuit of happiness, life, living, pursuit of happiness, well, it doesn't make me happy that someone's sitting on my car directing others around me.
No, it makes
me happy to get them off.
You know,
so,
yeah.
Either brake check or some other means.
This too should pass.
This,
This too shall pass. This will all pass. This is all temporary. We're going to get our country back. You watch. I want to thank...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. We're limited on time, so...
Yeah, I know, brother. I really enjoy your program. It's a shame the station at Airgill, 1180 WFYL, they got a fast one pulled on them, and when they moved to Abington, I can't get it on now. Get the station on. They don't have the power where they were before. So I'm limited to calling you in and then listening a little bit while I got you on the phone and hearing you that way.
Right.
But I thank you for all you do. I'm praying for you and Leona. Have either of you watched the movie The 39 Steps yet with Robert Powell?
No, I haven't seen that. But I remember you mentioned it.
Yeah. YouTube TV, The 39 Steps with Robert Powell, 1978. We're there. You guys have a great day and God bless. Keep up the good work.
God bless. Thank you. All right. Yeah, he's a great listener. All right, so you know, I just think that the long game is actually to win over the support, the hearts and the minds, because fighting that, you know, is not a long term winning solution. And I think Trump is thinking big here, and I just think a lot of Trump haters that find themselves call themselves conservatives, like some of the talk show hosts I mentioned, and you know. I call them out, you know, because I just think that they're amateur analysts, and someone ought to know that some of these people are frauds, and they're sitting there with a mic, and they're really where do they stand? What are they going to do? Vote for Biden?
Yeah,
you know, I can't figure that out. This is there's never been a more binary choice, and you know where Levin and Thomas Sowell were talking. Levin seems to think that 2020 is the biggest election in the history of America. Yeah. I actually was always said, you know, well, 2016 was the biggest because with that, we would have had Hillary. And I was then saying, you know what? I think if Hillary won in 2016, yeah, we would be in horrible shape. We would have multilateral trade deals. We would have had multinational corporations running the show. We would have had not as much of open borders, but we would have had the same melees and problems with the caravans and the importing of boats and a whole bunch of other things. But you know what would have happened? The mainstream media would have actually still put on their tie and collar tight, and they would have acted out their parts as if to say, you know, we have high integrity and the people the little people that are working in the middle class don't get it. I think that what now with 2020, I think one of the things that's happened in the last 3 years is what we call Trump derangement syndrome, where these people, have you ever seen Austin Powers, where these fembots blew a gasket, right? And they all exploded. And that's what's happening around us, is we're seeing Don Lemon and Fredo Como, and, you know, we're seeing CNN and MSNBC exposed for the, you know, the whatever they are, they're not even biased anymore. Bias is not even what they are. They're propaganda machines. And we're seeing it exposed. We're seeing the FBI, you know, not be able to cover up their mess anymore. And they have to explain themselves. And so now that the cat's out of the bag, it's sort of like, you know, when everybody's sort of playing this game of charades, right? Where everybody's trying to play like they're taking the high road. Mm-hmm. Well, that moves the ball slower. Right. The ball. Yeah. They're still advancing their ball to the socialist agenda, to the new world order, to the globalists. But what's happening is the ball is moving at a gradual, nice, steady pace. Don't think, you know, there's no potholes here. You know, we're not going to ruffle anybody's feathers. We're just going to cruise on down the road. And eventually you're going to wake up one day and boom, you're answering to Brussels. Right. You're answering to the Bilderbergs. You're answering to the globalists. And that's the way they were going to do it. But when Trump took office, they realized that Trump was going to break everything. He was going to be the bull in the China shop, and break everything. And they are now exposed. So once you take the mask off, once you take that veil off, once you expose them for who they are, no longer can they actually hide. And it's sort of like in any movie you've ever seen where it's like the guy got busted. It's like, yeah, you busted me, but now I'm going to come after you.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's sort of like the cat's out of the bag. And we see that with Roger Stone, clearly, you know, where we know what hypocrisy was going on there. What baffles me, though, is that I still have liberal friends that are still drinking the Kool-Aid, still supporting Biden, and still hates Trump, even though Trump is and his support team have been the victims of spying and a whole host of other things. So it doesn't make any sense to me why it is that some of these people are still drinking Kool-Aid and not waking up, except for they were just a lot drunker on the Kool-Aid than we ever expected. Now, getting to charter schools.
Yes.
It is amazing to see that the L.A. schools are basically saying, we're not going back to school unless you do away with charter schools.
And you defund the police. And I think that this is a very important point that we need to make, because what this does is this highlights a competition that's been going on for the better part of 20 years between charter schools, which are also public schools, and traditional public schools. Now, the difference between a charter and a traditional public school is that the charter schools are founded by an outside organization or group of people. Like the one I was employed by as a development director for several years was started by a group of concerned parents in Philadelphia. So that's the difference. But in terms of how the money works, and a lot of this is about money, the state will give money to the public school or to the charter school. But the charter schools receive less money per student than the traditional public schools do. But if a child, if John Smith leaves public school A to go to charter school B, the money that John Smith would have given to public school A, part of that goes to charter school B. So in actuality, charter schools are doing more with less, but the resentment on the part of the public schools is that they have less money, and they're always making this argument that charter schools or school vouchers, which will enable a child to make a choice to use money towards a charter, towards a private school or parochial school, are stealing from the public schools, which the reality is schools shouldn't be about the teachers. They should be about the kids. And not every public school is the right fit for a kid. They should have other choices.
We know what the politics is behind this.
It's the teachers' union.
Demanding that the schools stay closed. And the reason why they want to do that is because if the parents have to stay home to watch their kids, then they can't go to work. And if they can't go to work, then the stock market's going to tank. And the stock market's going to get squeamish, because they're not going to know how corporations are going to figure out the puzzle of operating successfully at full 100% speed with, you know, displaced workers and working in a non-perfect environment. Not to mention the fact that the future of our children and what they're able to learn is going to be impacted severely, because they say, I mean, if you lose just 1 year,
yeah,
that has a huge impact on that generation.
Exactly. And these kids have already lost months. And Scott, I've made this point on the show many, many times. This is a have and have not situation, because the kids who come from the affluent backgrounds, their parents will find ways to give them catch up. But the kids who don't, for whom school is a safe place in many cases, a place where they have an opportunity to foster their education better than they do at home, those kids are going to lose out. And furthermore, you cannot be justifying these teachers' salaries if the kids are sitting at home with their parents trying to play policeman and with the computer and trying to make sure that they're logging in, because turning the computer on is not evidence of learning. It just means you've turned the computer on.
Yeah. And that's what we're faced up against. So, I mean, the liberals don't care about the children. They don't care about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
The Black Lives Act Blue's been just taking the whip to the backs of Black Lives Matter slaves who go to the streets and paint murals and break windows and attack the police. And they have the scars to prove it. But do you think that Erin Hill, sitting in her townhome in Boston, that gets $400,000 a year through Act Blue, who's pulling the puppet strings for Black Lives Matter, who, when you go to their websites and you click donate, It goes directly to ActBlue, and ActBlue sends all their money, not only to their salaries and travel and entertainment expenses, which is upwards of $25 million, but they then send it to Joe Biden, who sits there like a big, huge dodo brain, who is a puppet, to all of his masters that surround him, the, you know, Andrew Weissmans of the world. What Andrew Weissman was to Bob Mueller in the special counsel is what, you know, Biden is the Bob Mueller. And you know, and he's surrounded by a team of Andrew Weissmans who are going to basically dictate policy and run our country. They're unelected officials, folks. They're squirmy attorneys with socialist agendas. There's no way we want to put our country into the hands of those types of bandits.
Absolutely not.
And with that, we're at the end of the Scott Adams Show. Be sure to check out scottadamsshow.com for the 9 a.m. to 12 noon syndicated hours of the Scott Adams Show. And you'll be glad you did. Our live stream is right over there at scottadamsshow.com. scottadamsshow.com. My name is Scott Adams.
My name is Leonor Cravetta.
And we'll see you next time on the radio. Bye-bye now.
D.C., but close enough now to see this mess. Where I stand, the mound's getting steeper. I grab a shovel, dig a hole a little deeper, just to bury my kids right up to there.